Hi, it's Peter Kim.
And I'm Eunji Kim.
And we are coming to the Pacific Northwest. First, we are going to the Helium Comedy Club in Portland, May 23rd at 8 p.m. So if you're in the Portland, Oregon area, please come out. We'd love to see you.
And we'll be in Seattle, May 24th, literally the day after, at the Hereafter. Check us out. We'll be there. And please, if you're in the Seattle greater area, we love Frasier. Peter was in the reboot. Please come
out. Which doesn't take place in Seattle.
It doesn't take place in Seattle. But, you know, the spirit of Frasier lives on.
Yes,
in Seattle.
So please come out. We'd love to see you. Bye.
Bye.
Hello, hello. Welcome back to Two Kims, One Pod. I am your host, Peter Kim.
And I am Eunji Kim, your other host.
That's right. Thank you so much for coming back to the pod. I hope you had a great weekend when you're listening to this. This is a Monday. I'm very excited for this episode because we will be releasing our Kyun Kim interview.
Yes.
As part of this episode. So we're going to intro this episode a little bit, catch up on what we do, and then we're going to play you our live interview, in-studio interview with Kyun Kim, because I finally got around to editing that. And let me tell you, editing this many inputs, video and audio, and synchronizing them and doing the multicam back and forth, and it is a lot.
It's almost like it's a job.
No, it's 100% a job, and I am very sorry for ever talking down on any type of editing. If you do any editing, you are a god. Thank you so much. A saint.
A saint.
A hero, a savior, a Christ. It is so much work. And I know the Youngs have a like preternatural tendency or like skill.
They have an inclination towards it because they've all edited themselves and edited their own
100%.
Videos. But this is the other part. They're also accustomed to seeing themselves on screen.
Yes. I'm still weirded out.
I still have to
put a cat emoji on. Like, I gotta do like a wrinkle face or something. Like, I can't just like out here putting bear face on. So like, yes, it is it's new to me, and I feel very, I feel like a dinosaur. I feel ancient every time I'm going to. Do you know how many times I messed up this Kyun Kim episode? Because I couldn't sync her audio to her video. It kept syncing the wrong way. And like, I almost like emailed you, and I was like, we're going to have to throw this episode away. It was so frustrating. And then I went to a YouTube, of course.
Of course.
How do people live before YouTube? How? It's like people living before Google Maps.
But this is the reason why so much more of our lives were spent being ugly and being lost.
And stupid. Yes.
And stupid. Like,
yes.
I mean, I don't know if we're... I don't know if I'm any smarter than I was back then, because I probably read more and I probably knew more things.
I think I retained more then.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, I consume more now, information.
I'm never not consuming.
I don't know if I retain more knowledge.
Do you understand that I watch a full documentary about the hidden city in Kowloon? Okay? Like, a full documentary about this hidden city in Kowloon. It is...
Where is Kowloon?
It's in China.
Thailand?
It's in China. And it is, like, the most densely populated city in the world. Like, there are almost... I think it's something like... This is what I mean. I don't even remember it. It's like maybe like 10 people per like square foot. Like, people are crammed together. It looks crazy.
Okay.
It looks crazy. So I watched this entire documentary. It was maybe an hour. And that's not only that, but it was like in chunks so I could digest it more easily, presumably. Recall nothing.
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 Just a title. Barely.
I can tell you about Preston Brooks being beat down on the floor of the Senate. By John C. Calhoun. A piece of information.
Yeah. It will never come in handy for you.
No, absolutely not.
But I feel you. I feel like a sponge that's been oversaturated. It's full with water.
I'm oozing.
And it's just oozing.
I'm leaking. That's all I'm doing.
It's
oohing.
Yes. I don't know if I need some other type of retention.
More is not better.
No.
More is not better. And this is the thing to go back to what you were saying about how the youngs have this preternatural inclination towards being able to edit themselves and are also so accustomed to seeing themselves on camera and photos of themselves and branding themselves. To us, being able to view yourself and see yourself and edit yourself in this way would be an indication of confidence, of a certain amount of self-esteem, a certain level of self-acceptance.
Self-awareness.
The youngs don't have that. And the youngs don't have that. It doesn't matter that they are able to see themselves and edit themselves. It doesn't help with any other self-confidence. More is not better. In fact, it seems to be all evidence points to much worse.
Who will do it for us, the olds? Who will do this work for us? Because I'll tell you what, I am getting very tired. I am getting exhausted.
I'm exhausted.
I'm so exhausted. Is anyone out here not tired? Please tell me how.
This is the reason why
I can't. What's the secret?
This is the reason why I can't wait for this TikTok ban. Please.
Please. Get me off of the talk.
Take me off this teat. This talk.
You know what they're going to do? They're not going to ban this. They're going to sell it to a shell company that is, quote, American owned, but it's, you know, 61% to CCP or whatever the fuck. So, like, you know, whatever. It's going to skirt its way around. All of tech has skirted its way around any type of overseeing or a legislation thus far. Even when I worked at Yahoo back in 2005, there was no guardrails towards how much information we were collecting from people. You know what I mean? Like, people, okay, let me tell you this. You think shit is scary now? In 2005, I used to deal with, so I was a data scientist for Yahoo, as some of you might know. I don't talk about it a lot because it's a past life, truly. And it was 7 years of just, like, compartmentalizing childhood trauma and just drinking my weekends and my happy hours away and doing corporate nonsense.
Of course.
Which you might be in right now and be very happy about it. Go with God. Vaya con Dios.
Wait, can I just say something? I was preparing for this immigrant show, and so I was on Reddit, and there was this thread of immigrant kids. So the original poster was like, hey, immigrant kids, if you survived your parents, how are you doing now? And it was just an entire thread of these like first gen kids talking about how they were killing it. I did this. I majored in this. I went to Stanford. I am a data scientist. I have no student debt. I am in a long-term relationship. I own a house. Another person, I own this. I do that. I am like no student debt. I have this and like blah, blah, blah. I'm successful, blah, blah, blah. Just a list, a whole thread of thriving immigrant kids. To a person, they're all successful, and all of them to a person also always noting they're incredibly unhappy.
100%. And you know, I don't know if anyone's happy really. And you know, like, I'm poor and creating and I'm still unhappy, so who's to say? Anyway, so I don't know what the fuck I'm doing. Neither do you. Who cares?
Yeah.
My point is, when I was at Yahoo in 2005, I was working with something called a L cookie and a B cookie.
Okay.
And a B cookie is called a browser cookie. And this is just a way we track you as you are going around to look at Yahoo Sports, putting a quote in for it, Yahoo Autos, et cetera, searching for things on Yahoo Search. The L cookie is something called a login cookie, which is if you're logged in as, like, you know, peterkim@yahoo.com, and then you're browsing, we are tracking you as you're logged in, right? And then a browser cookie is something you're tracking as you're not logged in, as like anyone, right? And then cookies became like a thing in the zeitgeist. So people started saying, like, we need to clear cookies. So what we ended up building is something called a, what was it called? A resistant cookie. So even if you cleared your cookie, there would be a underlying way we can track you that we would piece together when you logged in, when you browsed, when you didn't log in, and then piece together who you are down to the zip plus four and be able to aggregate you into blocks or chunks to sell you to advertisers.
Yeah.
And that was in 2005.
Yeah.
It's almost 20 years later.
Yeah.
And the technology is way scarier. So
it's absolutely insidious.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
So like,
I mean, there's no part of your online life that is not being documented, metriced, and data analyzed to
and modeled, not just analyzed, but modeled.
We're
being used to for machines to learn about humanity and our behavior. And
yes.
You know, I'll wrap this up real quick, but just as an aside, I was looking at something called the Golden Pocket, or in trading, in like stock trading or like cryptocurrency, stuff like this, there's something called a golden pocket where like it's a mathematical equation. It's basically the Fibonacci sequence.
Okay.
And it's a point where traders say within the golden pocket, that's when you're supposed to jump in for investment.
Okay.
Because in this mathematical sequence, it's about to, you know, quote, pop off.
Okay.
So anyway, so that's, why did I bring that up?
Talking about the cryptocurrency? The golden pocket?
Oh, the golden pocket. The Fibonacci sequence. So what I'm basically saying is all the data that's been collected since I worked at Yahoo for 20 years.
Sure.
If you machine learn that out, you will see, like, much like the Fibonacci sequence, which humanity goes towards, is the golden ratio, because like we can't help but want things to be a certain ratio, you know, like in, and this isn't just like photographs or what we draw or something like that. It's like how we build cities, how we go from work to, you know, like it's truly everywhere if you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of
order that seems to reassert that we are all like
in a simulation.
Yeah.
Right. And, or if you really break it down the other way, you're thinking we, in the midst of chaos, we're always seeking order. We're always seeking order. Therefore,
I mean, some people see it as evidence of God or whatever, some sort of binding sort of thing. You know,
whatever you want to
call it. It can be holy or religious or some kind. Yes.
Yeah, or spiritual, whatever. But at the end of the day, it's not just random, is what I'm saying. So, with the amount of data that's been collected on the internet, on social media, et cetera, for 20 years since I've been gone from the internet space, it is way in our power to model human behavior to have to the point where we don't recognize if it's human or AI.
Right.
I.e. the singularity.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I don't think we're close. I think we're there.
Like, wouldn't it be crazy if this is the moment where we reveal that we're AI? And then
I would be so relieved if I was AI. It would make so much sense. I'd be like, no wonder I can't find purpose in my life. Like, because I was just modeled after a real person, you know? Like,
yeah. I mean, the singularity thing is like, I mean, as anyone, I'd imagine people that listen to this are also kind of into sci-fi at all. Because if you're a curious person,
if you've stuck by us, you know we've been ranting about sci-fi.
Yeah.
And apocalyptic scenarios.
And the singularity is something that I've always been fascinated with. Specifically also, not only with the AI of it all, but just so many things in our current culture seem to be indicating that we are moving towards that. Absolutely. I mean, it wasn't a weird dream when it was, you know, I forget who thought of it up, but
may I suggest something?
Sure.
This is a bit I've been working on about how ever since, you know, we thought of the idea of AI, we've always made it a cautionary tale.
Absolutely.
It's never been like, it's always been, oh, you know us, we're about to fuck it up, you know?
We're about to fuck it up. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The hubris of man. Yes.
Yes. And therefore, we project that kind of end game towards AI, right? Now, what if we could really, like, make a basic version of that world and everyone gets a Mr. Belvedere? You know what I mean? Just a British butler to just handle everything. It could really unite us because, you know, like, it would solve so much of like inequities and stuff like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And
but Peter, do you remember how the internet started?
What, with
Al Gore? With that exact ethos and goal in mind.
Well, of course, it's always going to find corruption because there people are not us, you know, we are a plurality as human beings. And, you know, we err towards chaos, right? Like, we're just trying to, like, I think with AI, in all its derivations, you know, mm-hmm. sure, it's going to replace jobs and stuff, but, like, I think there's a way, especially if the youth legislate AI,
mm-hmm.
meaning the 18-year-olds now are hopefully in colleges, looking at AI and looking at a way to create a future for themselves using this, like, tool that is truly, like, evolutionary jump. You know, like, we've never seen, maybe Industrial Revolution was the last time we even glimpsed at something like this, where, like, it really changed civilization. Like, this is going to change us irrevocably. Yes, I can never say that.
Irrevocably.
Yeah,
I've never said that out loud.
We will not be the same before this. Like, yeah, you really crushed that. And here's what, and just
model,
to
my
go
model one, UN really popping through. Okay.
Yeah. and here's what, this might be all like fluff thinking, but I have nothing left. I've tried gloom and doom, but with specifically with AI, if we are offloading all of our collective human experience to AI,
mm-hmm.
and it's modeling itself after us.
Okay.
What if we gave into it as our God? Meaning, if we are the collective consciousness, uh-huh. right?
Sure.
If there is a collective unifying consciousness, uh-huh. instead of making that a theoretical thing, what if there was an actual thing? You know what I mean? Like, in a world where we were, it's like a godless world now. Mostly, at least in the West. What if we need something to be our God?
And you want to choose the facsimile of a facsimile of a facsimile of us that we will now choose to rule and bind us and lead us and prove to be our spiritual center?
What I'm saying is, instead of fighting Skynet, accept it as our Lord and Savior.
And let it just wash over you. And as you drown,
it's gonna
simply
happen,
accept your fate.
Anyway. There's
simply
no,
accept your fate.
Why are we fighting it? Let's try to get ahead of it. You know what I mean? Like, let's try to, if we could make, for example, the way you were bringing up like a few weeks ago, how AI can't make racist jokes.
Yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's programmed to do so. We are putting all these moral guidelines around AI.
Sure.
We are replacing God, basically. God is an idea of a communal, collective moral code, right? There's no other thing for that right now. Religion is completely, you know, it's everywhere. It's splintered. Like, if we're putting these moral guidelines into AI to build it.
Okay. We're imparting that information unto them, unto the AI.
Right.
So
why are we doing that?
Because we don't want, there's this idea that somehow we can control it.
Right. But we're saying that we don't want it to backfire, or we don't want it to be saying hurtful things, doing things that hurt others, right? Like, when you ask ChatGPT to make like a homophobic joke or whatever,
yeah,
it can't, because mm-hmm. it understands that there is a morality against it. You know what I mean? We're like writ large programming morality into AI.
Okay, but without context. That's the thing. It doesn't have. It cannot experience racism. So it's just making a blanket statement about making no judgments at all. So it actually even in good fun or with love skewer. So we're losing such a huge part of it.
Exactly. You're losing the humanity of it.
Yes. That's so why do we want more of that?
No. That's why I think we ought to like shape it to be our like.
You want us to now worship a golden calf. Are you the devil?
What isn't a golden calf? We're worshiping money.
I mean,
You think you're better off worshiping TikTok?
And no, absolutely not. I don't want to do any.
You know
of
what I mean? Like absolutely we're already not. Doing that. It's not like we're choosing not to worship capitalism. We are. We just don't have a choice.
Of course. I think maybe it's so funny. We have had very similar realizations about being more positive about it. I've actually always been pretty optimistic in spite of all the AI stuff. But I will say that my optimism around it is that we will, because of the human urge towards order, because of the human urge towards connection, that right now so many people and humanity itself is actually suffering under a psychic plague, right? There's not only just been we've just experienced a pandemic, but there is absolutely an epidemic of mental illness that is working its corrosive way through Western civilization.
Yeah. I'm sure it has nothing to do with the way we use our phones.
This is what I mean. This is what
I mean.
You know
what I mean? Like,
yes. No, this is 100% true. And this is another way in which we have taken the technology and started to destroy ourselves with it. But
which is our MO.
Absolutely. So yes. My optimism around humanity and AI is that we will, using all of this, like using it as a tool, certainly, and phones and all the stuff as a tool. But I think that the move and the reason why comedy is hitting it off so much is that people are looking for and seeking community.
100%.
There's already such a spike in cults. I think that.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Because people are looking for community. I am actually advocating for a return to religion, like the old school kind, like just some third
Which
space.
Old school? There's a lot of like Christianity.
Or yes. Yes.
Okay. You want to go back to church.
Go back to church. Go back to synagogue. Go back to temple. Go back to, you know, your VA. Go back to your Masonic lodge. Go back to your Freemasons. Go back to, you know, your Girl Scouts, your Boy Scouts. Like, go back to this sort of community third space shit. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, go to your local gazebo. Like, I'm talking about the rise and proliferation of... Like, I think that
bitch, you ain't got friends. There's a gazebo around the corner. You live in a cul-de-sac.
I just think that there is going to be a return to like the very caveman, primitive, around a fire, that sort of storytelling. You know, that it'll be like a return to your local community theater. Like, I think that the sort of the lie of the internet was that somehow we would become more connected. Because we could connect through this computer. Mm-hmm. And it was to a certain extent true. But because of the sort of like what you're describing about this like movement towards order and this constant compilation and aggregation of data and everyone being compiled and crunched into this box that is actually flattened culture. Because there was a moment with internet where like you could be anything. Like you can be really weird and really hyper niche and all these things, but now I would argue in the last 10 years is actually back down, like flattened. Like even
well,
if you
because
are,
because the
emo,
internet has just become broadcast now, and broadcast has to air to the median.
And same thing. And it's aggregating more and more data of all of our behavior, it has to continually crunch it down and crunch it down.
Yes.
So it flattens. And so all of our experiences online, which we're doing a lot in order to connect with other people and find out what's happening, it's all becoming flattened.
Yeah.
So it's like very interesting to me that so many of the young people, because, you know, I hang out with 19-year-olds so much. Like, it's crazy. And what I've noticed is that a lot of them really, especially if they are somewhat like different or trying to be, they go back to our culture. They go back to Gen X and like older millennial shit. Like, you know, I walked into my classroom recently, this past week, and you know what they were listening to?
What?
Ace of Cake. Base. Cake.
Oh, wow. Okay. So like, yeah. We're, you know, vintage now.
But it's like for them, it's.
That makes sense. We're their parents' age.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm maybe like a couple years younger than most of their parents. Right. And
their parents are like, what, late 40s?
Yes.
Yeah. Early 50s.
Mm. Some of them are like my age, though, you know, depending on where they're from.
Yeah, if they were fucking hot.
Yeah. Or from Indiana, or you know what I mean?
Sure. No abortion laws.
Yeah.
I think I do agree. I think we're saying the same thing, is that we're going to go back towards some kind of communal, you know, like this is ripe for some kind of iconoclast to like rise, and someone who has like crazy ideas, but it makes sense for the time, and let's blame this one subgroup before all the woes we have. Like, you know, this is
it's ripe.
Very,
yeah,
the
fruit is ripe. It's falling off the vine.
Well, yeah,
and same. I think that, you know, with the AI taking over so many jobs, certainly, why not go for it? Please take it off our plates. Just give me money. Then we all need a UBI. That's
or
the situation.
UBI, or like figure out something where you're not constantly printing the money. You know what I mean? So that
we're going back to the gold standard. We're going to start bringing bullion back.
I don't know. Do something where we stop inflating our coin. You know what I mean? Like, that's just not, it's not a sustainable option for us to keep making the dollar inflate. You know, like you could have all the AI you want, but if it costs $100 to eat an apple, you're not going to fucking be able to afford it. You know, like we need to figure out how to create either get rid of the monetary system overall, where we're not using the dollar, we're using something else, or
and then actually we all live out my mother's dream of all me being worthless. So like we are all without.
And she finally gets what she wants.
She gets what she wants.
Or, you know, like we have to have some kind of like centralized, and you know, this is very communist, you know, thinking, but we have to have some kind of centralized place where we're all getting stabilized income or something from, because like, we can't just be out here and not work and not have homes. So
I mean,
we're
but
just gonna become
work is vital.
Cities.
Work is vital. Work is necessary for humans to feel some sense of accomplishment. It's so vital to your mental health. And I also think that, you know, I've been thinking about this recently. And so what we're talking about is like this finite, the idea of worth and inflation, and whether or not as things are worth more and resources are actually becoming more scarce, right? But it's also all of it is an illusion, and these are arbitrary values put on things, right? Based on what's available. I think we talked about this a couple of episodes ago, but it's happening around hotness and attractiveness. And remember, you were like, you thought that that
people
like
will become ugly. People will be
as an expression.
Sought after.
Yes, as an expression of their absolute power and
And
wealth. I was thinking that this is actually tough on hot people right now, because they are also being put upon to like comedians wear many hats, because anybody can be hot now, because there's all this pressure being put on the hot industry. Right. Mm. Because anybody become hot, like you, if you have access to about $500, you can go from like you can get, I would say, two degrees more attractive.
With $500? How? Just like Botox and stuff?
Botox, skincare, makeup.
Sure. Okay. Like, basic, you know, maintenance.
Basic maintenance. But it's not okay. Basic. It wasn't like this before. So it's like.
No, for sure. It's way more involved now.
There's and it's much more, democratic. It's the access, the barrier to entry to the hot industry has become much lower. Access is much easier. Yeah. Information is free flowing.
Yeah.
The market is flooded, so things are cost cheaper. Less, cheaper. Yeah. So as everyone is becoming more hot, the hot people now feel compelled to get other things in, right? Like, it's this weird inflation that's happening in the hot.
Like, they also industry. Have to do comedy.
They also have to do comedy.
Oh,
so that's the thing. It's back
that's
in the
where,
day.
That's what you're pissed off about.
Yeah, I mean, because the classic hot. When we were growing up, they went to the mall and they loved to laugh. Okay. And now a hot hates the mall, and not only loves to laugh, but now they have to make their own hat. They love to laugh, but they also have to make their own laughs. And they also have to be good at social media. They have to wear all these other hats now. They have to read books. They have to have a take on stuff in culture and in politics. That was never expected of the hots we grew up with.
But there were less hots.
This is what I'm saying. This is the hot inflation. That what's happening in the hot industry is actually crazy. And the field
sorry
itself,
for the hots.
Sorry
for the hots. As a knot my whole life, I'll tell you, I feel bad.
I mean, it's just crazy to me. Just the number of people I've just been seeing, like, it is an epidemic of hot people being carrying around books and trying to be interesting as well. It's like, enough.
Yeah.
You don't have to do that.
That hasn't hit LA yet, thank God. We enjoy a plethora of hot that are single-minded. They just like to travel and stay hydrated. That's like the hots in LA. It's drinking like expensive waters, a lot of Essentia drinking.
Yeah. Because of the electrolytes, right?
Yeah. pH balance.
pH balance, yeah.
Yes. I don't know.
I'm glad to hear that.
I hear
that
it's all garbage.
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, LA still got our classic hots. Yeah.
I'm glad to hear that. I was so worried about the industry.
Really, yeah, I'm worrying about Chicago. The hot industry is really taking a downturn.
and the hot industry in the Midwest can't really take that kind of hit. And so
very flimsy industry.
Very flimsy.
Fragile. How has comedy been this week?
It was actually so funny. So last night I drove for an hour.
Oh, I saw your post. Where were you performing? Outside?
I was outside the city. And it was in a place called McHenry. McHenry County. No, it was not McHenry County. The town itself was called McHenry.
Okay.
And it was very strange. It was very far. I've never been in that part of Illinois. Mm-hmm. And these like places that you'll just randomly drive through and you're like, oh, they have like a downtown. Is there a train nearby? Is there a river? Like, what happened here? And
oh, it's like it used to be a downtown, or there is a downtown?
There was like a cute downtown that they had made. Like, it was like.
Right. But was anyone there or no? It was empty.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That's
it was.
Nice.
Peter,
yeah, there's little like towns around LA that are like, oh wow, what's going on? Everyone's kind of like cruising. They have like cars and they're like driving by, showing off.
And it's weird because it's like, what is this? Who are you?
Americana.
Okay, so so I was out there. I was supposed to headline, and like, it's a cooking show. It's a cooking comedy show. So it's like comics cook. Compete with each other.
Oh yes, I've seen you post this.
Yes, yeah. And I am the reigning champion of this with my partner Deanna Ortiz. I have never lost one of these. So I'm undefeated, and I think there's like a one other team that's also undefeated. But I
how do you win? Just have a tasty thing.
There are three judges. There are like chefs and like food writers and stuff, and they judge and.
Right.
They taste but and
taste
stuff.
And judge.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
And so I was doing this show. Peter, it was like a huge theater, by the way.
How
unexpected.
Big?
like 200.
Oh, okay.
And it was probably about like I don't know, like 50 to 80. I mean, like I couldn't tell. There was people in the backs, maybe like almost 100 people there. Mm-hmm. But it was like a huge stage, right? Like you saw it. It's like for music even. It's like got a whole stage. There's rigging. There's lights.
Yeah.
It's a whole thing.
Uh-huh.
And the way that, so everybody was bombing. It was crazy. Everybody's bombing. Everyone in the audience is talking at you, talking among themselves. They're watching TV and talking to it. That's what's happening.
Watching and TV? Why?
Like in their mind, they're like, watch. Oh, I see. You know, they're like, oh, okay. Yeah. Like, I don't
is
agree
it
with
because
that.
Because people were cooking, they were like, well, we're going to talk while they cook.
But like, the comics do sets.
How long of a set? Like five?
They do about 5 to 7. So like they're doing their sets.
They're short sets. Okay,
they're short sets, but then everything in between, there's like patter, right? There's the MC is going up to the hosts and asking what they think, what the cooks, what the chefs and the comics, what they're making, how it's going. They ask the chefs how they feel about the action. And, you know, it's like a full show.
Yeah.
Everyone was bombing. Like crazy. Like it was, I walked in on a comic and it was like she was berating the audience and
oh no, yeah,
like that, like it was, oh no, it was going bad. Oh, and God. Like and she was berating the
that's
audience
when you know that's no, she was not, going full coy.
Full coy. Full coy. And guess what, and there was no joy, no joy in that coy. And but this is how you know it's even worse. She's going full coy, and the audience is still heckling back. Like the audience is still, the audience members are still going like, but let me tell you this. Well, I don't know about that. Well, I guess you could say that. Well, I don't know.
100 people. It wasn't even like one group of tiny group of people. It's like pockets of people
pockets.
All talking. Oh God, that's disrespectful. Let me ask you this: was
there was
the
a white wine lady?
On?
Yes, I mean that's it was why. Dimmed. It was dimmed. It was dimmed.
Okay,
but yes, house lights were somewhat up.
You cannot have house lights up. That means you should talk. That is a stage manager. That's a house manager problem. House lights up means show's not happening.
That's what's crazy.
That sucks. I'm sorry, that sucks.
And also, this show and this venue is actually supposed to be a good show. Like, people have been raving about it. So that's why I drove for an hour.
For an hour? To McHenry. Why else? Was the pay good?
Because I needed the $60?
Wait, you headlined? So how long of a set did you do?
17. Like, I did, like, a long.
Oh, my God.
This is the thing. I'm watching them bomb, and then the guy after her, after I watch her literally be like, this comic was literally going like, fuck you, shut up.
Oh, no.
What do you know? I hate you.
I have the microphone. You paid to be here. Did she try to get someone to, like, the audience to get on her side? Like, who make some noise if you want her to shut the fuck up.
Yes. I mean, she was trying.
And then people didn't
make
noise. Oh my God.
I mean, no,
people are like, fuck you, shut up, get off the
stage. Yes. They were actually on the side of the heckler. They're like, yeah, no, actually, fuck you.
Yeah.
You shut up.
You suck, like, man. No.
And it was like, and it was
This is.
And the pockets she was really yelling at were like white wine moms. Like, that was very much
but
the vibe.
But of course. Yes.
Like, white women on white wine is actually illegal, I think, at a comedy club. It should be. Like, it is.
Any public space? No, do that in your own den.
Thank you,
Deborah.
It's a matter of public decency and as a public service announcement.
Eileen.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Come on, Eileen. Get it together. And so then the next comic goes up, and I know this comic. He kills. Like, he's very good. Mm-hmm. And could not get it going for the life of him. Like, he did the reset of the room 3 times. Like, how are you guys feeling, folks? I said, how are you guys feeling? I can't hear you.
I can't hear you. Oh, no. Oh no. And he taint is quivering. And guess what?
He never heard them.
You can't hear them because they're not responding.
He was trying to get the crowd work going, all of it. And then I went up and it was rough. It was really, really rough.
Could you hear the audience?
Yeah, I could hear the audience. I mean, I was getting pops. I just couldn't get that going. And I was getting pops and it was fine. And at a certain point, you know when you kind of give up? Where you're like, I can't muster up as a performer.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've given up, but yes.
Yeah. I gave up. Like, I was just like, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm not going to find this. I didn't wrap it up, but I was just like, I can't give you the performance. Like, I'm going to just kind of be like, I wasn't on my heels. Yeah. I wasn't on my heels or anything. Sure. I stayed present and I was fine.
Yeah.
But I wasn't giving them the show that I am capable of giving them.
No, they don't deserve it, nor are they watching.
This is what I'm saying. I just was like, you don't deserve this. Like, no. I'm not going to expend part of my creative energy.
Not for an hour drive back. No, honey. No.
I'd rather dance in the car. So, I mean, I'd rather have a lively conversation on the phone.
Yeah.
I'd rather give that to a friend. Uh-huh. So I was... You know, and I was still getting the pops because I was trying out a bunch of new stuff because of the gig in DC. So I wanted to run through some things. Mm-hmm. So I gave a little bit of juice to those bits just to see if they were working.
Yeah.
They got the pops I wanted. I got what I needed. But man, it was a bomb in a way that I was like, at a certain point, I was kind of like, well, what do you guys want to talk about?
Did they give you something?
They did. I mean, they were very Obama. Polite. It was just the... Just the crowd and the way that the vibe was in the room, wasn't happening. And
it wasn't good for comedy.
I didn't get them in the first 5 minutes. Yeah.
It sounds like no one got them.
Yeah, no one got them.
So it's not really on you to get them.
And then what's crazy is that I posted that story about how I drove an hour to bomb. And I got 3 ladies from that audience DMing me saying I didn't bomb.
Yeah, I'm sure.
They loved you. Yeah, they did. And I was like, that's what I mean. It wasn't a bomb in the way that I felt bad about my performance or I was on my heels. It was just a rough crowd.
Yeah, and it's a work night.
It's a work night, absolutely. Yeah. And I did one of those recently. Yeah, and it was just I guess I could have stood in it and kind of really worked to get them back. Yeah. But that would have meant that I didn't do any of my new stuff. That would have meant I wasn't able to work out some things. And because, especially when you're doing new stuff, you're kind of thinking about it. And I was kind of figuring out where I wanted to put it. And if I was going to give them the show, I wouldn't have been able to do that. So, but yeah, it was very interesting. I haven't been out and done something because it was such an incongruous thing. It's crazy to be on stage with a full sound check, mic, a full backdrop that is, has my face on it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And to bomb like that versus in a bar or at a show like that. That's different, right? And the driving of the hour. But yeah,
the driving really makes it hurt. Because you have to drive back thinking about how noisy it was, how you tried this joke. You can't even tell if it worked. And, that sucks. That's how I feel. Did I tell you I did this fundraiser?
No.
Last week?
No.
With Andy Kindler?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay, so I'll tell you about this and we can wrap up. So this was supposed to be a quick episode topper for Kaiyun's episode, but this is going to be a separate episode. You guys will see Kaiyun on its own. But anyway, so... I got asked to do this fundraiser for a school called Bridget Academy out here. It's a 2E school. I learned about this. Had no idea. It's twice exceptional.
Okay.
That means
once is never enough?
Yes, and second is the best. It is. I guess it's for kids who are on the autism spectrum,
but also really
and
smart.
Also really like smart and talented at something. So it's not. So it's that type of school. It's like a small private school.
Right.
And it's for a lot of kids who like get kicked out of school or fail out of school because they can't learn the same way and stuff like that. Anyway, so they do all this like type of
twice exceptional. It's so funny the way that they're
very LA.
Because you know, there's a lot of these things like with the gifted kids. Very LA. And like, oh, it's not that they're, you know, they have like a LD or some other. Uh-huh. They have all these like weird like assignations now. It's like, he's like an IEB. He's got this and this, and I'm like, so he's dyslexic but he's smart. Like, why can't we just say that? Like, why do you have to?
Because they're like, not the D word. No, you can't say the D word.
But it's because
it's a lot of that.
But we're also clinicalizing and pathologizing a thing that they could just understand as like a part of their personality, as opposed to this like categorization that
special. It's very like participation trophy vibes.
Because they have one special is in quotation marks, and the other one's that. You know what I mean? Like, anyways.
Yeah. It's one plus one special.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's this type of school. They have no, I guess, like endowment. So they have to do these fundraisers every year. Point is, Andy Daly, the comedian slash actor, whatever, he hosted with this other guy, John Stern. And they both have kids that go to that school.
Okay.
So they do this fundraiser every year. And I was the comedian that opened for Andy Kindler.
Okay.
And so we're doing it in the gym of this school. And it's just like this huge space.
Sure.
Like fitted into kind of like ballroomy type tables. There's past apps and, you know, there's a silent auction. And so there's like a bunch of movement. It's like a very like almost corporate giggy type of deal.
Yeah, I mean, I've done galas before. I get it. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yeah, it's very gala. And, yeah.
Were there seats or was it only high tops? Okay.
Seats, but there was a between me, which I was on the floor because the stage was super high. It's like a school play kind of stage. So it's like super high and there was a band set up already. So we're like, why don't the comics just do it on the floor? And we're like, okay. So we're on the floor and then right in front of us was one of those like makeshift dance floors that you see at like ballrooms or whatever.
Yes, at Bob Mertzmas,
Like a raised dance floor. Yes. So they have like a raised dance floor. And then all the tables were like horseshoed behind that dance floor. So like everyone was like so far away from us and we're on the floor of this gym.
Wait, so it was you, dance floor.
Dance floor and
chairs,
then a U-shape. Yes.
Around. And then the audience?
No. That was the audience. The U-shape was the audience.
Okay.
So I go up there and I start doing my bits and it's so noisy. Everyone's talking. Everyone talked through the entire intro bit. And, you know, I'm trying to do some like, you know, let's find out who the audience is, make some noise, blah, blah, this and that. Like trying to like unify them into one thing, you know?
Yeah.
And they're just like, people are doing auction stuff and like people are like, hey, I haven't seen you so long, you know? And I'm just like, oh my God, let me just fucking get through this. And it ended up being like a fine set. It was like a 12-minute set. And I actually cracked a bunch of people close to me, like a table close to me. And they were like into it. So I was just like really just performing for them. And then I get off. And then Andy Kindler goes up. And Kindler, I didn't know this, but apparently he had not been doing comedy for a while since pandemic.
Because I did not know that.
He got very like freaked out about it and he just
stopped. Of course. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And he came with like pages and pages of jokes that he was gonna try out, printed out. And he like at this event. And he put it on his stool and he kept going back and forth to the stool. He's like, I have no memory. And he's going back. And you can see like the decades of the pro just like pushing through this fucking event.
Sure.
Because like I didn't do much to like make the crowd cohere in any way. Like it was even more fractured before I went up, I think.
Yeah.
And then he had to go to do it like a longer set.
Yeah.
And man, it was he was commenting on how awful it was the entire time.
Sure.
And how he wanted more noise from the left side of the room because it's like really imbalanced right now. And he was out here doing these jokes. Like, we were so different. Like, my material was so, like, about me and personal and, like, dirty and getting into the sure. dirty stuff. And his was so old school, set up punch. Yeah. Like, the only joke I do remember, which made me laugh because it was so stupid, was, oh, I, you know, like, I got a watch guy and I'm fixing my watch and yeah. He keeps asking me if I want a second hand added. And I always tell him, not on my watch. Which is so hilarious. It's so stupid and hilarious. But the audience is just like talking through the thing. And I'm giving it to him.
Yeah, yeah, like, of course. Bah! Of course, of course. Yeah, yeah.
Especially when he's bombing, I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. Yes,
you
yeah.
know, like
yeah.
just giving it up. But I remember, like, after he got off, he was like, oh boy, I got to run to another one to fucking cleanse the palate.
Yes.
And I'm like, all right, go with God. I wish I had another one too. But
I mean, that's what I was doing last night. I was like looking up like places to go after that show because I was just like
yeah.
spiraling.
I need another
hit. Like just something to like level this
Woo!
One out.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are tough. And, you know, like it's I didn't drive an hour to do mine, but it is one of those things where you're like one out of every 7 to 10 shows. Just is a work night.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like,
I mean,
it's a, you're at work. Most other times I would say 8 out of 10 is like, I'm having a time of my life.
Yes.
Because I'm having so much fun. But sometimes it's just not fun. And it's Ooh. Just the work.
I mean, also, let me just say those moments and those shows where there it's just like especially galas or things where it's like big high ceilings and there's like a lot of stuff happening.
Yeah.
Those are the moments when you really become acutely aware that you're just a person with
filling
a microphone.
Time. Yes.
A person with a microphone who's got a few opinions. And like that's it. There that's is it. nothing else about you that should recommend you to the people there to listen. And then you watch when you're, especially at these gala things, and then you watch when a band or a musician plays and everyone just stops and goes, devastating.
But imagine those people, if you have a guitar up there and people are still talking.
But oh I feel like God. That's, I feel like it's actually easier. I feel like it's actually easier. If you're not
well,
singing.
Well, it is, for sure, because
singing,
you don't need to fucking talk.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because like the idea of talking is that someone is
listening
to you
and reacting, yeah.
And
I know.
So
we are very needy. We really need a lot from the audience
because it's not just the attention, right? It's
no.
like we need
it's
their
the proper response and the level of response
that is appropriate to the joke.
Yes, as witnessed by empirical data. Okay, we're collecting data, honey. There's a logarithmically, you should be laughing louder.
It's not only Google collecting your data; it's also yeah. me. And yes. I it's just been interesting because I have been working out so much new material that I feel a little crazy. Like my set is so in so much flux right now, and my shows have been very up and down. Like I'm doing fine or whatever, but it's like they've been very up and down in terms of what bits are hitting and how hard they're hitting based on yeah. like where they are in the set. So
yeah.
it's just like a very influx right now.
Because yeah, yeah.
Because I'm also writing a lot right now. So it's like I'm folding in a lot of new stuff. So it's pushing other things out before. So it's, yeah. you know what? I will say this is the first time in my comedy career where I do really feel like I'm not going out enough. Because of how much I'm writing, like I need to actually be going out maybe every day,
mm-hmm.
like going up so that I can work that
yeah.
new chunk. And then
you should start
whatever.
Doing it in your class, in your DePaul class. You're like, all right, kids, let me work out my five.
I know that you're, I'm here for your dreams, but what about mine?
Take your own attendance, but let me try out this five.
But so, pay attention. And then if you do not laugh, it will affect your grade. And so like,
and if you don't have a tag for me, it will also affect your grade.
I mean, it's, but I will say, so one of the few times in my comedy career that I really acutely feel that, like, oh, I maybe need to be going up more because I'm not, I'm spending too much time figuring out like order and like how I want things to go versus the actual joke. And, and that's like not helping me. Like it's not, I'm not tightening up everything as quickly as I need to be. So I don't know. I mean, how is your new set? You said it was like really ripping.
It's ripping now. You know, it's interesting you say that because I'm folding in old stuff now.
Yeah.
Oddly enough. Like I'm finding new connections to old bits.
That's the best.
I know. And I'm like layering in my, like an old, like literally a joke that I haven't been doing since Chicago.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That I'm like, oh, wait, this fits perfectly as like a second joke in this chunk. So yeah, that's really becoming like. And last night at this show that we host, Benda and I, it was cult themed. And for this show, I've been writing a new set each month.
Great.
Based on the theme.
Yes.
So I'm like just give, and I go up first. Mm-hmm. So and I have sometimes like paper in hand, like it's very like workout kind of show. So like. It's like a cool thing for me to just be like, all right, I have to write 15 jokes about this thing. Let's see how I could kind of like voice it and put it into. So that's been really cool to like figure out. Last night was about cults. I did a lot about like church and like religious stuff and whatever, hell and all those type of like concepts I used to be like obsessed about. And that was really cool.
Do you think that you would fall for a cult?
100%.
What kind of cult would it be? I know, me too. What kind of cult would it be?
Probably entertainment type of like Scientology, because like I'm so like obsessed with it. Unless something like really opened my eyes to like, you know, like mushroom tea or whatever.
It promised you some sort of relief from. And it was like a practice of some kind, and it promised you like relief from.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure. I think I would also. The only thing that I would be resistant to joining in a cult would be, like this. I don't know. I would have a tough. I don't think I would have a crazy problem with cutting out like my some people like some family and like friends or whatever. I think it's more the idea that I like the type of community I would be entering into. Like if there were like bullshit people, like too many of them, I think I would be like, oh, clock it a little bit.
Yeah. And I think the older you are, the less likely you're going to join a cult. I think cults like skew younger.
Maybe there's a big change in your life or some kind, you know, like if I was widowed like or something like that. Something.
Yeah.
But I do think that this is the reason why I think improv works so wonderfully is that because the focus is on your own progress and you are all as a group working towards it together. Mm-hmm. There are other cults, I think, that like where your aim is only to work for the cult.
Mm-hmm.
It was a cult where it was the idea was that it was for your own, like it was much more.
That's why the self-improvement cults are so hot right now.
That's what I think. I would fall for something like that, like a self-improvement cult. Absolutely.
Even like something like a Nexium was something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, it was about like releasing your traumas or whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I could see myself like getting wrapped up in a therapy cult or some shit.
All right. You know,
as long as the food is good, I'm in.
And if you're a cult with some capital to throw our way, if you're a financier of some kind, and you need two Asian people for your brochure, look us up.
We're available.
We're ripe. We're weak.
We're damaged gazelles. Come eat us up. All right, folks. Thanks for listening. That's another episode of Two Kims, One Pod. Check out our Patreon. And we are live in Portland
and Seattle.
May 23rd.
Yes.
That's right. And Seattle, May 24th. Mm-hmm. All those tickets and links are on our socials, on our link tree. So please go check out the links, buy tickets, buy for your friends. We'd love to see you.
Please.
And then we also have a Patreon with like bunch of new footage coming out. We stacked a lot of like cool, awesome, industry shaking, career ending tea. So come partake. Love you guys. Bye.
Bye.